Smith.
Chalmers for the tie. Got it for 2 seconds. Unbelievable. At midcourt, launches the shot. Oh, it almost went in. Duke is the king of the dance. It's Page off balance. Puts it. This is the point where he always hits it.
Show.
We've gotten more than a few emails over the last few weeks about the ins and outs, as we call it, the intros, the outros of the Mixed Picks Sports Show, which is a mashup of various announcer calls, and specifically wanted to start today's show with a mashup of Jim Nance's, some of Jim Nance's most famous, greatest calls in March Madness, because he's not there this year. And a lot of people are noticing for the first time, even though we knew it was going to happen. Steve Mickelson is back with us live from Las Vegas from MixPicks.com. 2Ks in Mix, 2Ks in Picks, MixPicks.com. Good morning, Steve. How are you, my friend?
Good morning. Doing wonderful. Thank you.
The men's NAAC tournament fans, some are wondering where the voice synonymous with some of the most popular college football, or college basketball calls rather, is. Jim Nance became the lead voice for CBS's coverage of the NCAA tournament in 1991 and has called every Final Four since. He is not courtside calling the games this year. He decided last year would be his last so he could focus on his family and other broadcasting commitments. He's not retiring, obviously. He's still going to do the Masters. He stills the lead CBS NFL coverage caller alongside Tony Romo. This is becoming more and more common as they age. Al Michaels, Joe Buck, now Jim Nance, other things. And they all have generational wealth. They don't need to work. I've talked a lot of times over the years about, as glamorous as us sports fans think it would be to be a sports announcer, it's a grueling life. You're on the road. You're living out of hotels. You're away from your family, and you're away a lot more than people think, it can get to you. So Nance said, I've got to cut something out, and I cut out the NCAA tournament. Ian Eagle has taken over. A lot of us know Ian from football. I think he's doing a great job from the games I've heard him announce. But that's why Nance is not there, and we wanted to start off with that just to acknowledge it. And say that we will see him again at the Masters with his eponymous? No, that's not a word. Eponymous? Whatever. You know, his hello friends, that whole thing. All right, let's get. Before we get to March Madness and the NCAA, Steve, you can always call us at 888-989-9811. You can email us, rad@radradio.com. We talked a little bit about this last week, Steve. You kind of went over this because we were talking about the Oakland A's moving to Las Vegas. They're going to stay in Oakland for at least this season, maybe next season. I was opining on what the hell kind of attendance are they going to get. They were getting 3,000 people last year. What are they, 1,800, et cetera. And you brought up revenue sharing, et cetera. And we discussed the fact that we presume this is all about banking money so that when the team moves to Las Vegas and when they start actually playing in the new stadium in 2028, that they're going to actually invest money in the team. Vegas is a very attractive city. It's going to be, by then, a four league team. They're going to have all of them. And that he'll start recruiting real players and actually field a winner. That's the theory. But we got this email from Robert who said, I'm not sure how true this is, but knowing the owners and how cheap they are, it said that the A's payroll in 2007 was $79 million.
Well, here's a look at the original.
I don't know what that was. And the payroll for 2024 is $61 million. So I ask, how can the owner pull this off? How does he think that doing what he's doing and having the team move would actually get asses to seats for a baseball season? I've been a loyal A's fan since 85 when I first played T-ball. If I lived in Vegas, no way would I want an owner of a team that treats not only the players but the fans like crap. So I go back first to my premise is, he's not going to treat the fans like crap in Vegas. He's going to start fielding winners, we presume. People aren't just going to show up because there's a team there, especially because under your theory, Steve, it's not a brand new team. There's plenty of baseball fans that live in Las Vegas. They already have their teams. And they're like, I'm not going to watch the A's. I'm a Giants fan. I'm a insert whatever fan. Who cares? So beyond that, though, people don't understand – the owner of the A's is actually making money despite not getting people in the stands.
Correct. And because he keeps such a low payroll, he gets X amount of revenue share from the other teams. Thus, at the end of the day, he's actually making money now with this low payroll to help him go forward. The big question that's in that email and asking, and this is the part we don't know yet. We can assume he's going to turn into a real owner, but he's never been a real owner with the A's. Is he really going to change in Las Vegas? Yes, a new ballpark, new revenue stream. You like to believe you're going to get the fan support. But if he really doesn't have the intention and the loyalty to try to win. And this is the problem with a lot of owners in these sports leagues. You hit the NFL and there's like 10 or 12 really owners that really want to win. The rest are more using it as a business. So far to me, the A's owner has never shown a desire to be competitive, a desire to win. He's going to get that opportunity in Las Vegas. But if his true nature is to not want to be competitive, to run it as a business, he's not going to be continually successful in Las Vegas. He may have some good seasons here or there, but he's never going to build a Yankees or a Dodgers or anything like that, because that's not in his nature, to, at least to this point.
Why did I turned off my own microphone? That is the weirdest thing. I did that. That was not a technical problem. And that is the big question. And I think we'll start to know that in 2027 and or the offseason as to whether or not they start making moves. And you're absolutely right. If you just put a loser anywhere, it's still going to be a loser, especially in Las Vegas, where there's plenty of other things to do. It's not just sports, right? It's like there's plenty of ways to spend your money in Las Vegas.
Correct. And that's the part that I'm not sure the owner for the A's has really figured out. There are so many other options for that entertainment dollar. If you're not going to put a competitive product on the field, especially Major League Baseball, the NFL's a little bit different, but Major League Baseball, if you're not going to put a competitive product on the field, they're not going to show up. I think that's plain and simple. And one of the things the Vegas Golden Knights did so well is they were competitive from day one. They won over the fans. I mean, in their first year, they went to the Stanley Cup, and they have been a really good team every year. Their owner, their management know what they're doing. They're fielding the best product, and the A's have to figure out that they have to be competitive. Or maybe you just go to Las Vegas, sell the team, and bring in somebody who wants to be competitive. But if they're not competitive, the A's won't draw in Las Vegas either.
All right, let's get to March Madness, and let's talk about, first of all, yesterday's results. I'll go through the results, and we'll pick out just a couple games because we've got our Sweet 16 now. So yesterday you had two number twos, Marquette 81, Colorado 77. Number one, Purdue took care of Utah State 106-67. There's a close one. Number four, Duke, who is outperforming what I expect. I thought Duke would do well, but they destroyed number 12, Madison, 93-55. Clemson, 72, Baylor, 64. That's a 6 over a 3. Alabama, ranked 4th, went 72-61 over Grand Canyon, ranked 12th. Number 1, Connecticut took care of number 9, Northwestern, 58. Houston needed overtime as a number 1 seed to beat number 9, Texas A&M. That was a great game to watch. And San Diego State, in the 5th seed, 85, Yale, 57. When I give you those results from yesterday, Steve, what games, 1, 2, couple, whatever, stick out to you either as shocking or you're thrilled or you're pissed or you can't believe it? What jumps out at you about yesterday's action?
There's about four games that really jump out at me. One is Duke and just how well they've played in this tournament. You know, this was the year I think everybody had finally, look, Duke's not going anywhere. You know, they're in the tournament, but you can't take them serious. And they have gone out, and I think they've outscored their opponents in the two games by like 67 points, something like that. I mean, they have played great basketball to this point. Another game that stood out to me was Clemson against Baylor. Baylor's really good at the three-point shot, and Clemson took that away from them. Baylor was adjusting pretty much this whole game, but especially in that first half, Clemson took it to them, and they definitely outcoached Baylor in that game. Purdue, another team that's been exiting early in these tournaments. Fantastic game. And it's good to see the growth of Edie. And if you're not a huge college basketball fan, but you're watching this, but especially if you are an old-time NBA fan, Edie's the true definition of the centers you used to see in the 70s, 80s, and maybe start of the 90s, in that he just plays down low, fills up the paint, block shot inside, and his game is finally developing to where when he gets the ball inside and they go to collapse, he's kicking it outside. Purdue finally has some guys who can shoot from outside, but it's good to see Edie as that, you know, much more true center than what the center position has evolved into. And finally was the Houston, Texas A&M game. This was such a great game going into overtime. Houston, by the end of the game, four of their starters had fouled out of the game. They're in overtime. They're just trying to hang on in that game. But keep in mind, I believe Houston blew, what was it, like an 11-point lead late in that game, or seven with the last 2 minutes. They really collapsed down the end, couldn't hit their free throws. And A&M, no matter how much Houston was ahead, A&M just kept crawling back into the game, just kept coming at them, and unfortunately weren't able to get it done. But to me, those were the four games that stood out to me yesterday.
So let me combine two of them because they match up to my bracket, which is a disaster. Overall, but there are a few things. I had Duke going all the way to the Sweet 16 to play Houston, which will happen on Friday. As you said, Duke is playing, as I said earlier, Duke is playing above my expectations, even though I did expect them to do well. Coach K is gone. They're still an amazing program. Houston needing what they needed to, and I watched that whole game. That was a great game against Texas A&M. Just to get a little bit ahead of ourselves, is there in your mind, because in my mind, or in my bracket and everything else, I've got Houston beating Duke and advancing to the Elite Eight and on. Is there an opening for Duke, a legitimate opening for Duke when they take on Houston?
Well, I think there's a legitimate opening for Duke in the sense that they're playing great basketball right now. But I've always believed that every team that goes on and goes deep into this tournament has to have a scare somewhere. I believe the A&M game was that scare for Houston. And as much as I'd love to build up Duke for this next game, Houston's a 4-point favorite. And that's one of the games I like. I like Houston in this spot. I think they're going to bring Duke back down to earth. Houston plays really good defense. And I like Houston to beat Duke in this Sweet 16 matchup.
By the way, that'll be Friday at 6:30 our time on CBS. And we'll do this a more in-depth dive because we got 48 hours. Who knows? You know, you get injuries. You get other things that come in. Steve won't be joining us again Thursday and Friday for the same reason. Thanks again to Gary and Danny who stepped in. They did a great job on Thursday, Friday. They're going to be back this weekend or this week as well to finish out. And we've all got our little brackets going, and they're a mess. By the way, Steve, how's your bracket looking overall?
It's all right. I'm not going to complain. I will tell you that my Elite Eight, all of my Elite Eight teams are still in it, so it's not like I've had anything that's blown up yet.
Look at you.
I had 12 of the 16 teams in this Sweet 16. I put 12 there.
This is why you are the professional. I'm gathering. If we look at other games that are coming up for the Sweet 16 schedule, which will be this Thursday and Friday, let's just go through them kind of briefly. Give me your initial thought on where we're headed. Number two, Arizona, who I like. I think they've been looking great. But you were also just talking about Clemson. That's who they play at 4 o'clock on CBS. That's on Thursday.
Yeah, right now Arizona's a 7 to 7.5 point favorite here. Clemson has played really good basketball to get to this point. I just, you know, Arizona is one of those teams I think is balanced and is a very talented team. I like Arizona. They may not cover that spread, you know, that 7, 7.5. As you get to this point, the spreads become a lot tighter. But, you know, Arizona to me is a better team than Clemson. And I want to give credit to the ACC. I mean, everybody talked about how the ACC was not a very strong conference this year, but we're looking at Duke, Clemson, North Carolina. I mean, the ACC has really shown up and played well in this tournament. And I think that's a big surprise to a lot of us.
By the way, remind me, Steve, who did you have winning the whole tournament?
I have UConn beating Purdue in the final.
So I had two of the number ones going down, both UConn and North Carolina. They're still in it. UConn will also play Thursday. That game will be at 4:30 Pacific time on TBS, and they will play number five San Diego State, which it's San Diego State that you have an affinity for.
Correct. That right here. I went to San Diego State. That's where I met my wife. So, you know, huge Aztecs fan. This is the matchup of last year's NCAA tournament championship game. You know, the Aztecs were able to keep it close. I don't think anybody expected them to win last year. And I really don't think anybody expects the Aztecs to win this year. You know, they've really turned into a good college basketball program, but getting to the elite, you know, to the Sweet 16 after the championship last year, I was kind of surprised. I thought they would go down really in a tough game to the first round in Alabama, Birmingham. I had them picked to win, but they're an 11-point dog here. UConn's going to beat them. I'd love to say they can keep it close. You know, Ladie's been really good inside for them. I just don't think that the Aztecs have the horses to compete with the UConn team.
I had North Carolina, which I thought was the weakest number one, going down against Michigan State. That didn't work out. So at 6:30-ish on CBS Thursday, they'll take on number four, Alabama.
I think this is going to be a really good game. Right now, North Carolina's a 4-point favorite in this game. I could see Alabama upsetting them in this spot. North Carolina, again, has exceeded for a lot of people. Even though they're a number one seed, I don't think anybody's really taken them seriously as a number one team. They are very talented, but this is a spot you could see Alabama possibly knocking off the Tar Heels.
So the thing that I get to cling to here, with not necessarily my bracket, but any sort of bragging rights, is that I've got Iowa State winning the whole thing, and they're still in it, and they play Thursday night about 7 o'clock on TBS Pacific time. They play number three, Illinois.
Yeah, this is going to be a good game, not only, you know, just because of the matchup, Illinois-Iowa State, but Illinois, I grew up in Illinois, so Illinois-Iowa State, that's always been a big rivalry. Those two states hate each other when it comes to sports, so this is going to be a fun game to watch. I just think Iowa State's a little bit more deep with their team. Right now, they're a 2-point favorite over Illinois, which shows this really is a competitive game. But I like Iowa State here to get it done. I do believe they are a bit of a better team than Illinois.
By the way, how bad do you think my prediction is of Iowa State having a chance to win the whole championship?
I just don't see them getting by UConn. I have them getting into the Elite Eight. They're a good team. I'd love to see them go deep. Believe me, if they ended up winning it, I would almost be as happy as you is in that sense. I don't think they have a strong enough team to win the whole title.
Okay, so if we jump to Friday, make me interested, because all these games, for the most part, I'm either way into, or I'm fascinated by, or I'm interested, except Marquette against North Carolina State. So make me care about that game.
I wish I could. NC State is playing great basketball. They won the ACC tournament. I mean, and here they are in the Elite 16. They've really turned the corner. But I think at a certain point, you know, that Cinderella story's got to run out. There's always a few of those teams, the Loyolas, Chicago's. You know, I would put the San Diego States in that from last year. But at a certain point, it's got to run out. They're playing really good. But right now, Marquette is a 6.5-point favorite here. And I would be surprised if NC State could pull off the upset and move into the Elite Eight.
So the game I'm most excited about will be about 4:30 Pacific time Friday on TBS. First of all, Gonzaga's doing exactly what I said Gonzaga would do. They do it every year. What have they been in, 25 straight tournaments, whatever, and they always just work their way through the system. Now, I did have this matchup, Gonzaga against number one Purdue. I picked Purdue to win. Personally, I would love to see Gonzaga win, just because there's something about, I don't know what is in the water in Washington State or what they're doing there, but when March Madness comes around, they do something. But I believe Purdue's too much for them.
Yes. Purdue finally has some outside shooting. So when they collapse on Edie, as we were talking about earlier, you know, it really makes other teams struggle because you got to decide, are you going to drop down and double team Edie? And he has now figured out how to get the ball back out to the open guy. But Gonzaga, you got to give them credit. Ugh. I mean, they have been in the tournament now. And I remember back when Gonzaga, who's Gonzaga? And they've gone every year. I think this will be their ninth straight Sweet 16 appearance, which if you think about that, I mean, you're into at least three different classes of players and to still compete at that level. Great coaching up there. This was the year I thought Gonzaga would take a step back. I did not believe they were as talented as they've been in years past. So I had Purdue. I actually had Gonzaga getting there just based on the name, but I have Purdue beating Gonzaga in this spot. And because I just think Purdue is a better team. And I think Gonzaga is going to have a tough time containing Edie inside.
By the way, just because I am such a word and pronunciation guy and I cannot stand having lived there for a decade, people who say Nevada, it's actually Nevada. The locals decide. It's Gonzaga, not Gonzaga.
I don't know what I said.
Oh, you said Gonzaga the whole time and I said Gonzaga. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm not claiming I'm right. I didn't know if there, because I just don't like mispronouncing things.
But, I think it's Gonzaga.
Well, then you said Gonzaga.
Well, then I think I mispronounced it the whole time, because if you were to ask me, it's Gonzaga.
Okay. And then on Friday night, we wrap up with number two, Tennessee and Creighton.
Well, hopefully I can get these two teams right. But right now, Tennessee is a 3-point favorite. There are a couple of 2.5 sitting out there. This, to me, is the best matchup of the weekend. I'm really looking forward to this. Creighton is a very strong program that nobody really knows about. Tennessee has been outstanding all year. Going into the conference tournament, I thought Tennessee was going to be a number one seed in this. But I like Tennessee. I think they're deep. I think they play great basketball. And I like Tennessee to beat Creighton, but I do believe this will be a very close game.
Would you agree that overall this has been so far an excellent tournament?
It has been fantastic. The things that I liked about it is we saw the upsets on Thursday. I like upsets Thursday, Friday, you know, to see those dogs come in. But at that point on Saturday, Sunday, I like to see the better teams advancing because it gives us a better tournament throughout for the remainder of the tournament. And not that I'm a dog hater, because believe me, I believe in taking the dogs and the point spreads. It's just, I want the tournament to be exciting the entire way through. And, you know, sorry if, you know, Loyola Chicago, yes, it's a great story, but I really don't want to see Loyola Chicago in the Final Four, because I know they really don't have a chance at winning. I want the Elite Eight to be, look, these are the eight teams I thought could win it, and let's go get it.
How do you feel about when it comes back to bracketology, which I think I read they're all gone. There's no perfect bracket left. I meant to pull that story up. I didn't grab it, but I'm almost sure that's true. But how do you feel about whether it's office or somewhere else, these tournaments that allow you to, these in-office tournaments that allow you to reset? So, like, you and I would now reset our brackets for the Sweet 16. Because it's like, look, everybody's out, so we're just going to restart with the 16 that are left and go from there.
I'm not a fan of it. I mean, if you're going to pick it through the whole thing.
Right.
And I do believe that you are correct, and there are no perfect brackets left at this time. That's not a surprise. I mean, anytime. I'm not even sure there's ever been a perfect bracket into the Sweet 16. But, you know, to me, those are the consolations. Okay, my bracket stunk. Let's go reset. Let's start over. Mm-hmm. Give me that second chance. I'm not a big fan of contests with second chances. Look, you either know it at the beginning or you don't. And if you're wrong, believe me, there have been plenty of times my bracket is entirely blown up, you know, after Sunday going into the Sweet 16. I got nothing left, you know, but you just accept it, move on. That's what it is. It doesn't mean you don't continue to enjoy the tournament, But, you know, you got to take a little self-responsibility in life, and that's one of those for me, too.
We're going to take a break. I alluded earlier this morning, as I discussed the show coming up, that there's a story that you, Steve, seem to think is a much bigger story or could be than what we're hearing already. It involves baseball. It involves one of the biggest names in baseball. We're going to go through it, and I'm going to, and I don't know exactly where your head's at. I've seen your texts, and I want to find out what you're thinking about it as we are now days away from opening day, real opening day of Major League Baseball. We'll talk after this.
Knicks Picks, the Mix Picks Sports Show.
All right, let me just clear up a couple things about March Madness that we were talking about. Friday's action began with around 2,100 perfect men's brackets left among 31 million-plus submissions across the major online platforms. That would be the NCAA, ESPN, CBS, and Yahoo. Entering the second round on Saturday, there were no more perfect brackets remaining among those major platforms. That was Saturday. And to Steve's point, the longest a bracket has ever stood was 49 games in 2019 when a Columbus, Ohio man became the first person to have a perfect bracket beyond the second round. That's how hard these brackets are. Let's get to Major League Baseball. The season opened kind of sort of in South Korea, and it really opens this week. I got a text from Steve on Thursday. That was the first day Steve and I couldn't do the show together, and we couldn't do it the next day. The first text, and then there were more that had a bunch of context, was, Ohtani is going down. There's no way he's not involved. And that was an oh-well eye-popper for me. Let me give you the background as I know it based on reporting. Shohei Ohtani, by the way, is going to speak to the media today. For the first time since illegal gambling and theft allegations involving the Dodgers star's former interpreter emerged, the interpreter has been fired by the Dodgers. The question is about at least $4.5 million in wire transfers sent from Ohtani's bank to a bookmaking operation that is already under federal investigation. Sources, including Mizuhara, that's Shohei Ohtani's longtime interpreter and friend, Ipe Mizuhara, hope I'm pronouncing that right, have told ESPN that Ohtani does not gamble and that the funds were transferred to cover Mizuhara's, that's the translator's, losses. Multiple sources also said none of the betting was on baseball. The transfers had been sent in September and October to the bookmaking operation. Since then, early last week, a crisis communication spokesman has just been hired. That's never good. The Ohtani spokesman confirms the gambling debt was at least $4.5 million. The interpreter says he started betting on several sports, but not baseball. He had previously bet on DraftKings, didn't know that that operation was illegal through the bookie at the time. He says by the end of 22, he had lost over $1 million, started borrowing money, said he couldn't share it with Shohei. He describes his relationship with Shohei, who he first met in 2013, as those his brothers. His debt got to $4 million, and that's when he went to Ohtani for help, who agreed to help pay the debt. And then you go to questions remaining, including who, if anyone, is investigating this. Multiple sources told ESPN that neither the California Bureau of Investigation nor the FBI is working the case. The LAPD and District Attorney Office in LA and Orange County said they're not investigating, and all of them say it's a federal matter. Go to the U.S. attorney, who has no comment. Those are all the official things. Steve, I don't know what else you've heard, what you know, but where does the comment come from that Ohtani is going down?
Well, a few different things on that. One, they have Ohtani transferring the money on two occasions out of his account, not the interpreter's account.
Right.
According to the baseball collective agreement, by rights, Ohtani should be indefinitely suspended now.
Just now?
As they do this investigation. Now, Ohtani is the face of Major League Baseball. I don't think baseball really wants to go there because talk about a bad look for Major League Baseball. But from everything I understand, if this wasn't Shohei Ohtani, the person would be suspended now. And the reason is They have the wire transfers from his account to an illegal bookmaking, you know, company, guys, group. If that came from your account, it's hard for you to explain that away because it came from your account. Rob, you and I have known each other for over 30 years. Do I know your banking information?
None of it.
Do you know my banking information?
None of it.
Correct. My children don't even know my banking information, and they are my children. So Ohtani obviously transferred the money. And part that just keeps not sitting well is their stories have changed. I've always believed if you tell the truth from the beginning, your story never changes. You continue to say the truth. Ohtani and his interpreter story, when it first came out, changed. They were advised that it has now changed. Ohtani's coming out and saying something different. So why are you lying? And I think we have all established that their original, what they released, was not factual.
So are you suggesting that this was, if this was, let me just pick somebody, I don't know, I don't want to make him too big a name, but Trea Turner from the Phillies or Austin Riley from the Braves, if from his personal account, a transfer went to an illegal bookmaking operation, proven, they'd be suspended pending an investigation.
Absolutely, yes.
And you don't think Major League Baseball will do that, they haven't yet, to Ohtani because of who he is?
Correct.
How do they justify that?
What I believe is going to happen and what I believe should happen, always keep in mind, are two different things.
Yeah.
I mean, I immediately go to the Michael Jordan and the investigation into Michael Jordan and his gambling during the time he was in the NBA and understand that he stepped away. He went to baseball. He served his so-called suspension is what a lot of people want to say happened in that. But the NBA, when he decided to come back, agreed to no longer, you know, they agreed to stop their investigation immediately upon his retirement. And upon his return, they agreed to no longer pick it up because he had been away from the game. It was a non-issue and let it go.
So
now, I don't think Ohtani is going to step away and go play a different sport. But this is a serious black eye on the Major League Baseball. But the problem I also have is if you are a borderline player, if you are any of these other players and you're looking at this going, Ohtani should be suspended immediately and nothing happens. I mean, just Trevor Bauer comes to mind. I mean, he's been out of baseball for 2 years now for an allegation that, you know, no, he didn't go to court. All the allegations were dropped and he's still out of baseball. And we already know Trevor Bauer is pretty vocal. You know, how does he not speak up going, hold it a second. You have proof that he paid off an illegal bookmaking operation and you still do absolutely nothing?
So you asked about the lying, the changing of the story. You know the old expression. It's been around since Watergate. It's not the crime. It's the cover-up that gets you in trouble. Is there anything that you can think of that Ohtani could say today when he addresses the media that would make us go, okay.
As in he's not guilty? No, I don't think there's anything he can say to that. And you know, I don't know if you've ever used a bookie.
No, I haven't.
I've been sports betting, you know, I've been sports betting for most all of my life. This illegal bookmaking operation from everything that I've heard, and keep in mind, and I don't want to get too far off on this, but this illegal bookmaking operation was also tied to the president or GM, top guy at Resorts World who went down. This is tied to, I believe, a couple of other high-end executives in Las Vegas. The guy at Resorts World has already resigned due to his contribution into this investigation. But a bookmaker is not going to want let a guy run up a $4 to $5 million debt. It's just not going to happen unless he knows the guy has the money. I'm sorry. But the interpreter, from my understanding, was making $500,000 a year, and he's racking up debts of over $1 million. And my understanding is this illegal operation dealt with major league players and players throughout various sports. They're not involved with an interpreter. I'm sorry, I have a hard time buying that. You know, that's like, look, I'm a big time bookmaker. I'm not going to just add a guy from off the street. It just doesn't happen. So again, we're all innocent until proven guilty. I just think there's so much more to this that the media and Major League Baseball is hoping can just go away. And I'm not sure it can.
Totally unfair question, and I won't hold you to it. But best guess right now today, where does this end? What does this lead to?
My personal feeling it should lead to, or my belief of where it is going to lead to?
Oh, yo, you know I always want to hear both.
Okay, my personal belief of where it's going to go, they're going to pin it on the interpreter. Shohei Ohtani takes care of him for the rest of his life and pays him whatever salary or whatever it is. And takes care of him. Ohtani stays in Major League Baseball. It goes away. The interpreter takes all the blame, and Ohtani gets painted as the good guy who just helped out a friend and had no involvement in any way and didn't say anything to anyone that his interpreter had a serious gambling problem. He just let it continue for many years, because it's not like Ohtani just started playing baseball. He allowed it to continue happening without any of his knowledge, and when he became aware, he just, look, I'll take care of you. It's all good.
And that's
what
that,
I believe is going to happen.
That storyline is already in place because the interpreter already has come out and said these things. Ohtani hates gambling. He didn't know anything that was going on. And what you just described is how things work in politics and when you're talking about the $700 million man. What you think should happen is...
I think Ohtani is most likely guilty. I believe it was Ohtani. I think he was moving the bets through his interpreter. I think his interpreter had the money into his account. The illegal bookmaking group knew it was Ohtani, dealt with it, and that's the reason they extended such a large credit line, because they knew he could back it up with his contracts and everything he was doing. And I think Ohtani was heavily involved in all of this. I think it was mostly him.
Is he Pete Rose guilty?
I'm not sure he bet on professional baseball.
That's
where
the
Pete
one
Rose
yeah.
did. But and in the Pete Rose thing, in Pete Rose's defense, and I cannot excuse it, but in Pete Rose's defense, he only bet on the Cincinnati Reds. So it wasn't like Pete Rose ever said, look, I'm betting baseball. He never bet a different team.
Right.
He only bet on his team, the team he coached. The problem with that was he didn't bet the Reds every day. So the days he didn't take the Reds, it's like, oh, what does he know to not like his team to win today? Maybe there's a little something there. I would love to believe that Ohtani didn't wager on baseball in any way. But I have a hard time believing Ohtani, no matter what he says today, is not heavily involved in this. But Major League Baseball can't take the hit, and I think it's going to go away, and it really shouldn't.
We will absolutely talk about whatever Ohtani says today on tomorrow morning show.
Mix Picks, the Mix Picks Sports Show.
We got this comment from Greg as we're talking about whatever's going on with Shohei Ohtani. He's going to talk to the media today, Steve kind of talked about what he thinks will happen versus what should happen, and the will is very very familiar. Somebody else takes the fall, and meanwhile, the person who takes the fall gets paid off for the rest of his life. The big name, the $700 million man, Ohtani, goes away unscathed, and Greg says, this is what I don't like about all of this. He should be suspended regardless of his star status. And the big story, the big difference for me anyways here is, look, star quarterback special treatment is part of life. We all learn it in high school. There's a difference, though, between the special treatment you might get and literally violating a variety of rules, breaking laws, things like that. We're going to have to see how this all plays out. But I absolutely understand that sentiment, Greg. I want to make sure that I mention, and if he's not listening, I hope this message gets back to him. There's a country club in the Roseville, California area called the Sierra View Country Club. There's a guy named Bill who used to listen to my other job, the Rad Radio Morning Show, when he lived in the area. He moved to, I believe it was Arizona. He kept listening for years. He is back now. I believe he's the general manager. He might even be bigger than that, than the Sierra View Country Club. He met with one of his good friends who happens to be the general manager of 104.7 FM and 890 AM here in Sacramento, where the Rad Radio airs, and so does the Mixed Pick Sports Show. And Bill went out of his way to tell Kurt, the general manager, how much he loves this show, because it is two guys talking sports who clearly respect one another. They can disagree without being disagreeable. They don't yell. They don't scream. They give us the information. They answer questions. They say when they don't know. And it sounds like he is just an extraordinary fan. I hope he's listening like I'm told he does every day. If he's not, and if you know Bill at Sierra View Country Club, get him the message how much we appreciate that, how much we respect hearing that from somebody like him. And Steve, I just wanted you to hear it personally, that there's people like that out there. More and more of them are saying it and appreciating what we're doing here.
Oh, thank you. Absolutely. I love hearing that. You know, we do this, we put in our time. I love doing this show, and it's just really great. You know, especially for me, this isn't my normal job, to hear that we're doing a great job. So it really humbles me.
Let me get to a couple of NBA items. I'm going to actually go back to last night, because it's two fledgling weird teams that you and I have been talking about for a couple weeks. Whereas just 2 weeks ago, the LA Clippers were the best team in the NBA, according to you. We don't know what the hell the Philadelphia 76ers are doing. They're hanging on. Just get us there, and let's hope that everybody's healthy. And they go out last night, and Philadelphia takes care of the Clippers 121-107. It's like NBA schizophrenia with these two teams. What do you get out of that result?
Yeah, they had a good game for the Sixers. I mean, they shot the three ball well. Tobias Harris, Maxey are trying to carry this team and keep them, you know, relevant in the playoffs, trying to improve their status. They're going to make the playoffs. You really want to stay out of that play-in tournament, you know, the Warriors, the Kings, etc. You see that. You want to be in one of those top six spots. Great spot. And this Clippers team, I shake my head. I don't get it. There's just times they don't even show up. You know, and then if you were to sit back and look at the times they're down by 20 and they found ways to come back to win those games, you know, how do you let your team get down by 20 in the first place? So they're definitely that Jekyll and Hyde type of team. And they got to figure it out soon, because it's basically playoff time now.
And that brings us to another Jekyll and Hyde team, and another team that has to figure it out soon. Those same Sixers play tonight in Sacramento. Last week, you and I didn't get a chance to talk about that appalling game against the Washington Wizards, where twice the Wizards had a double-digit lead. The Kings came back, and yet they still lost to the absolute worst team in the NBA, falling under the heading of what you and I have been saying. The Kings, basically more than half of their remaining schedule, they play teams with winning records. They are continuing to make it harder and harder on themselves. When you look at the standings, like you said, watch out for the Dallas Mavericks, who are now tied with the Kings with the exact same record in that 7th-8th position. And so you got the Kings at home tonight. Yeah, it's a two-nighter in a row for the 76ers. So which Sixers team shows up tonight? Which Kings team shows up tonight? And how do you see this playing out?
Well, let's roll back to the Kings Wizards. You texted me going, what the heck's going on? And I was watching it, and then boom, Kings cut it, I think, to one. And I texted you back going, you know, here come the Kings. And then they totally fell apart. But if you looked at the game, they didn't defend the three at all. I think Washington shot over 50% from the three-point line. They also dominated inside. It was a good game for the Kings coming back in Orlando, winning on the road. But the Kings really need to take care of business tonight. The bright spot is the Sixers got a big win in LA against the Clippers last night. So they're playing the second game of a back-to-back. Right now, you'll see the Kings as a 9-point favorite. Oof. And the Kings need a win. I think it's a good spot for them, because, you know, is Tobias Harris and Maxey going to step up and have another big game? But the Kings got to get it done. Even if they don't cover that spread, they have to win tonight. You cannot afford to be losing these type of games.
Well, and you have me obsessed with this now. So the Kings are a 9-point favorite at home, but they're terrible at covering spreads at home. Do you see them covering the spread at home? I mean, yes, you're right. They got to win, but by 10?
I can see it. You know, one of the things I look at with the back-to-backs is those teams that win the front end of the back-to-back, and I believe the Kings have been outstanding at that this year. It's that second game. Look, we got to win on the road. We're not expecting, you know, to win two. And I look for the Sixers to have a bit of a letdown tonight. Kings at home. Man, you got to get it going. I mean, light the beam. Let's get it done.
We got an email here as we get ready. I don't have an exact time for when Shohei Ohtani is addressing the media, and I cannot confirm this, but I did just get an email, rad@radradio.com. Rosendo says, I read that Ohtani is taking no questions and rather is just reading some pre-written statement and then leaving. I am not a fan of that approach. Boy, I'm not either. I get crisis management. I absolutely do. Whether it's politics or sports, I understand this. But I don't like it either, and it makes it even more hanky, shady, sketch, whatever word you want to use for it.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's one of the things I've always lived by. Live by the truth. You know, good or bad, live by the truth. Your story's never going to change. Here it is. This is what it is. And the fact that we already know their stories have changed, I don't see how it can get better. But I understand you got to have the crisis management right now because it changed. So now the whole public knows you were lying and you got to figure out how to escape with the least amount of damage at this point.
I totally understand it. And I do understand it from a PR standpoint. That's and you know, a few people pay me to consult them on PR, and I may or may not have said the same thing. I as a fan, I would like to see like at least three questions, even if they're pre-picked, like we know this guy might give us a good, and there is that layer of interpretation to where the interpreter can answer the question, and if it comes back later that the answer wasn't great, oh wait, well he didn't answer it the way Ohtani wanted him to, kind of thing. The idea of here's my statement, walk away, not a fan. We'll see what happens. We'll talk about it tomorrow morning. See you in 23 hours, Steve.
Thank you.
Mix. There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up. Yes!
Little roller up along first. Behind.